yesterday, and today is actually my mother's. Today is my mother's 90th birthday. You stole my thunder. I was actually going to ask who else's birthday is it. Yes, today is Wes's birthday, for those of you that didn't know. So make sure you wish him happy birthday. I don't think he's turning 90.
A few years.
A trivia question.
No trivia question. I'm out of Starbucks cards right now. So anyway, 41? Nice. All right. So anyway, all good. Fun days, fun times. I haven't been to a one-year-old birthday party in quite some time. They tried to put him on. We have a Lazy Susan, for those of you that haven't been to our house. So we have this big round dining room table, and in the middle is a Lazy Susan. And our thing with all of our kids is we take a chocolate cake, we'd set it on the Lazy Susan, we'd set the kid on the Lazy Susan. Just have at it, right? This is what you do. We tried to do that last night with Oliver, and my daughter-in-law was putting him on the Lazy Susan, and if you don't get in the center, it rocks. That threw him off. It was just like, right? And then he tries to move. He takes his diaper, goes right through the cake, right? So he ends up with, doesn't eat it at all, never touches it, but he's got icing all over him. I mean, all over him. It's like, how did this happen?
Picture, though, right?
What's that? Oh, yeah. There's, I think I've got video. We got all sorts of stuff, right? So, it was fun. I think so, right? Just get it all over him, and yeah. So, anyway, so it was a lot of fun. I don't think we're going to need this, and you guys, I kind of walk around a little bit. Anyway, all right, so we are continuing on on our Character of God series. This one's a little unique, right? When you think about all the different characters of God, this technically isn't an attribute. This is a reaction. And really, you could even say anger is not really an attribute. What's that?
Or maybe lack of one.
Or lack of one, right? Yeah, so it is kind of interesting, and if you kind of look at it in terms of the way it's positioned, as the verse is that, he lists two attributes, right? Compassionate, gracious. Then he lists slow to anger. Then he lists, loyal, love, and faithfulness. So it's kind of interesting that this one is just kind of in the center, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but it's just, that's kind of a Mackey thing. He likes to break apart from a literary perspective and what that means. So anyway, on that note, right, just a reminder, this is all coming from Exodus 34, 6, and 7, right, that says, Yahweh, a God compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, overflowing with loyal love and faithfulness. He maintains loyal love for thousands, forgiving iniquity, transgression, and sin, yet he won't declare innocent the guilty. He will bring the iniquities of the fathers upon the children and grandchildren to the third and the fourth. And I know we talked a little bit about that before. So let's switch over. We'll start the video, and then we'll come back and talk through what we can take away from this. All right?
If you try to describe what God is like, it could be difficult or daunting. But when the people who wrote the Bible pondered the mystery of God, they consistently describe God's character in this way: compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, overflowing with loyal love and faithfulness. We're going to look at this third phrase, that God is slow to anger. Now, that might surprise some people. Isn't the God of the Bible mostly angry, striking people down for their sins? Well, it turns out that God's anger in the Bible is way more nuanced than that, and way more interesting. In Hebrew, the phrase slow to anger is pronounced erek apayim, or literally, long of nose. But what does God's patience have to do with a long nose? Well, first, we need to look at the common biblical Hebrew way to say that someone is angry. Their nose burned hot. Like in the story of Joseph, when Potiphar thinks that Joseph tried to sleep with his wife, his nose burned hot. It's usually translated, his anger burned. It's describing how your body, especially your face, gets hot when you're filled with anger. And so in Hebrew, the main words for anger are either nose or heat, or hot nose. This is why a patient person is called long of of nose. It takes a long time for their nose to get hot. Like in the biblical proverb, a person's wisdom is their long nose. That is, their slow anger. Now, in the Bible, God gets angry numerous times, but God doesn't have a nose or get hot. These are metaphors, using our experience of hot anger to describe how God feels when he witnesses human evil. Just like you would get angry if you saw a child being bullied on the playground, so God gets angry when humans oppress each other and ruin his world. In the Bible, God's anger is an expression of his justice and his love for the world. But he's slow to anger, which means he gives people lots of time to change. Like in the story of the Exodus, when Pharaoh enslaves the Israelites and has their baby boys thrown into the waters, God sends Moses to confront Pharaoh. And Pharaoh's given 10 chances to let Israel go free, but after the 10th refusal, Pharaoh rides out with his chariots to destroy the Israelites, and so God destroys him in the waters. Pharaoh's own evil is turned back upon him, and we read that this is an act of God's hot anger. Now, that's really intense, but think about it. God wouldn't be good if he didn't get angry at Pharaoh's evil and eventually do something about it. And notice that God's anger is expressed by handing Pharaoh over to the consequences of his own decisions. And this is actually how God's anger is shown throughout the scriptures, like in the story of the Israelites. Over and over again, for hundreds of years, they betray the God who rescued them from slavery. And though he gives them many chances to turn around, they keep giving their allegiance to the gods of other nations. And each time we read that the hot anger of God burned against the Israelites. But notice what always follows. God gave them over into the hands of their enemies. Israel wanted to serve the gods of other nations, and so God, in his just anger, gives them what they want, as those nations circle back and defeat Israel. This is similar to what the Apostle Paul says in his letter to the Romans. He says, God's anger is being revealed against human evil, and then three times he says what that looks like. God hands people over to their destructive desires and decisions, even if it leads to death. But, Paul also says, God is patient, giving people time to come to their senses and change. Because remember, God's anger is a response to human evil, and it's based on a deeper character trait, his compassion and his loyal love. God is not content to let people sit in their own self-destruction. In the Bible, God's on a mission to rescue. This is why Jesus said that he was going to Jerusalem to die, as a demonstration of God's love for his enemies. He would stand in the place of his people who were choosing self-destruction and take the consequences of their decisions upon himself. In Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, we see God's anger at evil and his love for people working together to provide forgiveness and life for a humanity lost in self-ruin. So God's anger in the Bible is really important, but it's not the end of the story. When God is angry and brings justice, it's because he's good. And he's extremely patient, working out his plan to restore people to his love. That's what it means to say that God is slow.
All right. So, let's talk a little bit about what that means, right? So, one of the things that I found interesting as I was researching this is this slow to anger is actually a modern translation, right? The original King James actually had the word long-suffering. Now, that's not a word we use, right? It's not something I don't think I've ever used in normal speech. You know what I mean? But so I can appreciate the slow to anger, but I think it's also something to where we think about the word anger, and I think it means something different today than it did then, but I also think we can look at it in a couple of different areas, right? So he talks about, in the video, this anger from a protection perspective, right? It's a response to seeing something, and our bodies would generate, you know, with something that we value that is threatened, right? And so it's this deeper feeling of, you know, something that's at stake. And we're like, hey, no, I don't want that, right? That's wrong, whether it's personal or perhaps and injustice, right? The other side of this is anger as abuse. This is more anger that's out of control, right? This is more anger that's expressed, in some cases, if it's expressed by someone in power, it kind of becomes abusive, right? It can be bullying, etc. And I think we struggle on both sides of this. And I can tell you, I do. I have, back when I was a younger man and a little less long in the nose, maybe, for lack of a better term, I struggled with anger. I struggled with allowing the stress of daily life to, let's just say, make me grumpy. There were times that I would lose it with my kids. My oldest took it on the chin. Not physically. I didn't physically harm anybody.
Set him on a lazy Susan.
You know what, Kim? I wish I would have done that, right? You know, in all, you know, to exposure and confession, right? There were one time, I don't know, for those of you that have teenagers, have gotten through the teenage years, you get this whole thing of orthodontia, right? And my oldest, we were a little late to this party, and my oldest then had to get, he was 15 at the time, so he's in high school, he had to get this Herbst appliance to move his chin, move something around. I don't understand it. But it was hidden, right? It was back there and hidden. And you need to understand, I grew up, if you weren't dead, you went to class. You went to school, right? That's just the way it was. If your arm was broken, then we'll deal with it later. But go to class first and then we'll go, right? Or if you're bleeding, as long as it's not too much, you go to class. And for whatever reason, I can't figure out how we ended up doing this. I was the guy that took them to the dentist. Lisa took them to the doctor. So orthodontia fell on the dental side. So I'm taking Jackson back, right, to school. We're in the parking lot, and he does not want to go. And I just can't, you know, this is where, right, Lord, why was I so stupid? And I, you know, I just yelled at him, and I was like, get out of the car, and, you know, just said some really bad things. But it was, I look back on my life, and that's an area where, hey, I lost control, right? I lost control of my anger, in which, who cares, right? If I would have had a little more compassion, I would have said, gee, if I'm a teenager, I don't want to go to school. Maybe kids are going to notice this or whatever, right? What's one day of school? It's not that big of a deal. Anyway, full confession. Well, it could. It could, but, you know, I could have at least let go a little bit. But anyway, so that it was just, anyway. But I also feel like anger is one of those words that the society or those that don't know God use as an example to say, well, I don't want to know a God that is full of wrath or anger all the time. And I think one of the issues with that is that, you know, it's very easy for us as well as non-believers, right, just to pick pieces out of the Bible, right? And let's remember, the Bible is one full piece of literature that leads to Jesus. Okay, everything leads to the cross. And sometimes we make the mistake of plucking things out, right? And I think the world does exactly that. They see that. And I think if you've got this sort of, if you already believe that, or you don't have necessarily a relationship with God, or you already think it needs to be distant, it's very easy to assume that there is this angry God waiting to smack you on the knuckles, right? And I think a lot of people in the faith believe that. And that is not what we're called to believe, right? The kingdom of God is at hand. Christ brought salvation and life to us. And I think that's the part that I think a lot of people miss. And anger, I think, it connotates this negativity. And it's really not. And I think that's what they're trying to say here. So when we think about God's anger in the Bible, right? Anybody know who the first person God actually got angry at where it says he got angry? It's actually Moses. Exodus 4. What's that?
He was slow to anger.
He was, right? Exodus 4, 10 through 15, right? This is where Moses basically is saying, you know, God is saying, okay, I want you to go meet with Pharaoh, right? I want you to go and confront Pharaoh. And Moses is like, no, I don't want to do that. God asks again. God asks again. He asks five times. Five times. And finally, on the fifth time, God says, enough. Okay. And what does he do? He didn't punish Moses. He actually gives in, right? And elevates Aaron. So it's kind of interesting that kind of that very first time, after five times, to confront him, it actually doesn't lead to any sort of punishment or violence, but he makes a concession. A lot of people assume that the flood is an angry response. It's actually not. If you go back and look at it, nowhere in there does it say God is angry, right? At the world, he's so disappointed and sad, right? And that he allows the flood, right? He's holding everything back. He allows the flood to come in. So I think we make assumptions when bad things happen that, oh, this is an angry God. And it's really not. The next time we hear about God's anger after Exodus 4 is actually in Exodus 15, and they even mentioned it in the video, which was the poem that the Israelites had related to the parting of the Red Sea. Right? So he gave Pharaoh 10 chances. Pharaoh then lets him go, turns his back, right? Ends up dying. So, and then as we know, as we look at our kind of the scene that we've been talking about is all about the golden calf, right? God gets angry here. Remember, he's been with these guys for over a year, right? Traveling to Mount Sinai. They have constantly been complaining, even to the point of saying, I want to go back, because in Egypt at least we had food. Really? You were enslaved. But hey, you know, short-sighted. But anyway, you think about it, right? That's an example of, you know, God's, they break this covenantal relationship that we were talking about before, right? When we talked about the other compassion and gracious, right? This covenantal relationship, and the Israelites chose to break that. And this is where we see this repeated on a regular basis, right? And one of the things you may have noticed in the video was, what's interesting is, the Israelites were continuing to ask to worship other gods. Right? That's what they wanted. And so ultimately, God gives them over to that and says, sure, okay, this is what you want. I'm going to give this to you. And I found this one interesting, this Jeremiah quote that I'll read. So he says, therefore, the Lord Almighty says, because you have not listened to my words, I will summon all the peoples of the north and my servant Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, declares the Lord. And I will bring them against this land and its inhabitants, and against all surrounding nations. I will banish from them the sounds of joy and gladness, the voices of bride and bridegroom, the sound of millstones, and the light of the lamp. This whole country will become a desolate wasteland, and these nations will serve the king of Babylon for 70 years. One of the things to recognize with that I actually did not realize, was that the king of Israel at the time was King Zedekiah. He was pretty much a puppet king to Nebuchadnezzar. But he had, right, they had a treaty with Babylon at the time. Well, he chose to break that treaty. He ends up going off and makes a treaty with Egypt. Guess what happened, right? So it's just kind of one of those that's like, really, guys? Right, here we go again. But once again, and it's described, for those of you that are interested, in Jeremiah 37 and Ezekiel 17. So, and obviously, Nebuchadnezzar got upset, you should, right? Attacks, and they're exiled for 7 years. That's the part, the other part that I think I find interesting is God's anger is fulfilled, right? So it's one of these where it's not forever, right? God even identifies that. It's not, there's going to be a 70-year period that this is going to occur, right? And then you see in these different verses, we won't go to these, but just if you want to look at those up later, like Isaiah 12, 54, and Psalms 30, right? They're passages that describe the coming out, right? What is it going to be like to come out of this exile? Okay? So it's one of those where you're kind of work through that. Then we get into Christ. And what does Jesus bring to the table? Because obviously God sent his son to bring the kingdom at hand, right? And so Jesus is there bringing the good news, but remember, he's also giving the Israelites a little bit of warning. And he's warning them about soon to be Rome and what Rome's going to do, especially to Jerusalem, in about 60 years. Right? And I'll read a couple of these verses for you. So like Luke 19. When he approached Jerusalem, he saw the city and wept over it, saying, "If you had known in this day, even you, the things which make for peace, but now they have been hidden from your eyes. For the days will come upon you when your enemies will throw up a barricade against you and surround you and hem you in on every side. And they will level you to the ground and your children within you. And they will not leave in you one stone upon another, because you did not recognize the time of your visitation." Matthew 24, right? Jesus is walking out. He came out of the temple with his disciples. He was going away and his disciples came up to point out that the temple buildings to him. Look at these great buildings. And Jesus said, "Do you not see all these things? Truly I say to you, not one stone here will be left upon one another, which will not be torn down." So he's already warning them, right? This is coming, right? Kind of another Babylon is coming. Even though he came with life, right? He came with forgiveness and love and mercy, right? There's still challenges are coming. And, you know, as we look at the last slide, and I this is literally exactly what the script says at the very end of the video, is that Jesus said that he was going to Jerusalem to die as a demonstration of God's love for his enemies. He would stand in the place of his people who were choosing self-destruction and take the consequences of their decisions upon himself. In Jesus' life, death, and resurrection, we see God's anger at evil and his love for people working together to provide forgiveness and life for a humanity lost in self-ruin. So God's anger in the Bible is really important, but it's not the end of the story. When God is angry and brings justice, it's because he's good, and he's extremely patient, working out his plan to restore people to his love. And that's what it means to say that God is slow to anger. I think of this as being a parent and your children, and you struggle with teaching your children. And sometimes you can say it over and over and over, and sometimes, unfortunately, we have to learn the hard way, right? I mean, Lord knows I sure did. But it's that learning, right? It's that allowing those decisions and the consequences of those decisions to come back on you that really are the lifetime learnings in our lives. And that to me is what describes this slow to anger, this patience. You know, you don't want to see your children go through that. You know it's going to be challenging. You know it's going to be painful. Okay, so that was exciting. Let's go to questions. Yes, James.
This whole thing is a common thing that I see at work.
Oh, okay.
people asking him about anger. And
yeah,
anger.
Sure.
And it goes deeper now with the new generations because it's that God is unjust himself in his anger, and
right.
especially in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
This is an excellent answer to that. Huh. And it leads, one is that idea of taking someone from one letter to another letter that
yep.
we didn't talk
uh-huh.
about.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads into a gospel because mm-hmm. you can end up explaining that that's what Jesus was doing. And so,
yeah.
Seen that several times at work, kind of working that way. So,
all right.
If you're ready, when it talks about being ready to give a defense,
uh-huh.
This whole series, this particular one especially,
yep.
know it, put it in your heart, because there's a good chance you can use it with someone around you.
Right, right. Well, it's interesting, because that's the very first question I have, right?
Oh.
Do you know people that look at God through the lens of abusive anger? What are some ways you can help them understand that God is slow to anger and why this is so important? And to be honest, guys, I mean, Lisa and I did a lot with a ministry called People to People. And this was a ministry out of Argyle, Texas, actually. But the point being is there's a lot of people out there that are believers that really believe that God is angry at them. And that God is ready to strike them down or whack them on the side of the head. And that's not biblical, right? But it's so easy to go down that narrative. Okay, second, which I didn't really talk about the whole long nose hot thing. I just felt like, yeah, he did enough of that in there. But my question to you would be, what part of your body gets hot when you get angry? Or does it? I don't know, right? Nose? Face? Cheeks? Eyeballs? And then what areas of your life do you need to become slow to anger? Patience is another word I would use as well there, right? So, kind of get a little bit down. So, okay, one thing I did want to let you know. I have made an agreement with the next class that we will be out of here by 10:15. Okay.
What do we get out of it?
Yeah, so they're not walking in the door at 10:05, right? My point being is we're going to go till 10 after, and then we can socialize, but we kind of need to migrate our way out of here at 10:15, okay? This was the agreement, so, okay? All right, well, let's break into our groups, and I'll shut us down at about 10:10, okay? So I'll leave this up on the screen.